I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codename Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. We are so glad to hang out with you this evening. This is our weekly listener mail segment. It's one of our favorite times of the week, wherein we get to share stories with our fellow listeners. We are going to learn a little bit more about a situation in Canada that has that we talked about in the past. We're going to learn a little bit more about DEF CON, which I'm quite excited to visit, or some version of me. We're going to talk about paracousia, some responses to the idea of hearing voices, some responses to the undersea cables and the vulnerabilities they pose for civilization and the internet at large. We're going to start, I believe, with a story that we were grateful to receive. We recently did an episode on the concept of divine intervention. Whether or not you find yourself a person of spiritual beliefs, regardless of your own school of metaphysical thought, we know that it is true. The concept of divine intervention has fundamentally shaped human history and quite likely continues to do so in the present and in the future day. So maybe we start there. Noel, what stood out to you about this one?
I don't know. Let's read it, and then we'll kind of see what stands out about it to all of us. I'm always fascinated by people's real life encounters with the divine, or something that they perceive to be the divine. And I think that's a big part of what that episode was the idea of stories and the idea of people filtering their experiences through their beliefs. And, you know, results may vary. But here we go. This comes to us from Leslie, somewhere in Texas. I have been meditating since 1972. I'm not religious and did not become religious during any altered states, just a profound love and oneness with everything. So would that be a divine intervention? After these experiences, my outlook on life was much different. In 1975, a book titled Life After Life, written by a psychiatrist Dr. Raymond Moody came out. It was one of the first books about near-death experiences. When I read the accounts of these patients, he interviewed documented cases of clinical death and recovery, I realized I had the same experience as these patients, but I just didn't die. Some of you guys that feel that those who make statements like this must have psychological problems, must have never had anything like this happen to you. I studied personality disorders and drug abuse. I did an internship at the state hospital and a treatment center. I eventually was in charge doing psychological testing on all the patients. In my training and work, I had to do the same testing on myself. So no, I don't have a personality disorder. It was always encouraged to test yourself. I worked with psychologists throughout my time there because of all the testing on patients. I have talked to one female who told me about having extraordinary experiences. And unfortunately, she told her family. Family told her it was Satan. So she had been terrified of her experiences. How sad. Religion strikes again. I would say that my, quote, divine interventions were when my friends and I would drive a vehicle while intoxicated and not kill someone else or ourselves. Our asses were saved. Leslie, somewhere in Texas. The thing that stood out to me personally about this is the interpretation of what divine intervention can mean, or messages from the divine can mean, as we found in a lot of cases of, you know, prominent figures that expressed this and went in opposition to maybe the governing, you know, kind of status quo, which usually was the church, they would be ostracized as being having demonic visions or demonic possession, like Joan of Arc, for example. So this idea of filtering experiences through that lens can go both ways. You could say divine intervention is God stepping in and doing you a solid, or in the case of this example that Leslie gave, someone might say you are being visited upon by, you know, the damned, you know, the Lord of all evil, Satan himself. So, I mean, I know it's not a particularly long email, but I did think it would give us an opportunity to kind of chat a little bit about, you know, what some of these experiences might mean kind of in the modern day.
You know, I'm really glad you brought this up, Noel, because we have received a lot of communication about this from many of our fellow listeners who perhaps identify more on the skeptical side of things in most of their experiences. But as we explored in our previous episode on divine intervention, there are things that the human mind cannot yet rationally explain. And it's a very nice compliment, I would imagine, to the earlier conversation, exploration episode about verbal auditory hallucinations, hearing voices, you know, because it's easy. I was re-listening to an episode we did recently about the companies that were started by cults, our newest iteration of that. And there was a great point, I believe you originally raised it, Noel, about what defines the C word? What makes something a cult? Is it one? I think I said if there was just one guy who was Buddhist, I guess he would be Buddha, then people would treat him like he was crazy until he got millions of people to agree with him. And with divine intervention versus auditory hallucination, maybe we see a similar process, right? It is only after Joan of Arc successfully executes several stunning military campaigns that people begin to say perhaps a supernatural, heavenly, celestial force is intervening. And Leslie, to your point, I love that. I love that idea of day-to-day divine intervention, driving under the influence, no one dies, you know?
Maybe. Well, and obviously this is someone reflecting back on their perhaps misspent youth, right?
You know, right, but they survived.
For sure. You know, and this did get me kind of digging through our inbox for some other accounts of divine intervention.
Ooh, yeah.
I did find one more that I'd love to add to the pod, if I could, from Uncle Bosco.
Yes.
Hey, Matt, Noel, and Ben, I hope you are all well. I grew up in an atheist home. We celebrated Christmas and Easter, but not in a way associated with any Christian trappings hung on these pagan celebrations. I've never believed in a divine spirit or angels or demons or what have you. I still don't. That said, two things have happened in my life that I cannot explain. I've talked about both, and most people either don't believe me or say they were divine or angelic interventions. Incident one. It was June 1983. I grew up on an 11-acre farm, and our house was on the northwest corner. The school bus dropped me off at the southeast corner of the farm, and I'd walk through the fields and pasture to get home. My dad and grandfather were building a new house near where the bus dropped me off. Walking by one day from the school bus, I saw the stud walls had been put up. I was a curious, soon-to-be 13-year-old and had been warned that construction sites could be hazardous, so to only get close if my dad or grandfather were around. They were not around, and curiosity got the better of me. I was wandering around looking at how everything was put together, and I walked backwards into the hole in the floor where the stairs to the basement would go. I fell in slow motion and realized that the basement's concrete floor had been poured that day. I remember thinking how angry everyone would be when I ruined the concrete by falling into it. Then I saw my brown Adidas gym bag in my hand and feared it getting ruined by wet concrete. When my chin was about level with the plywood subfloor of the main floor, I stopped falling and was lifted to a sitting position on the edge of the hole. As I was being lifted and set down, I heard a soft whisper say, "It's not your time yet." It freaked the shit out of me, and I only went back to the house when my family moved in later that summer. I told one of my friends the next day, and he thought I had made the story up. I only spoke of it again when I was about 25. I told my parents, and they both said that I had likely started to fall, but caught myself and pulled myself up. Maybe, but not likely, with a gym bag with books and gym clothes. I'm aware of our mind's ability to change events and create false memories, and so I more or less chalked that event up to a false memory. We've got another incident here, but I'm just going to stick with the one since we already had the other email. But that's pretty cool. I would say coming from a self-professed skeptic and atheist, you know, why bother making up a tale like that? I mean, again, he talks about the false memory, but that's pretty significant false memory, you know, especially with the whole whispered, you know, it's not your time yet thing. What do you guys think of that?
I don't even know what to say. I think the gym bag saved you, Bosco.
There you go.
Somehow the gym bag attached to a spring mechanism unbeknownst to you within...
Why do you sound like you're twirling a mustache, man?
Go gym bag.
No, I have no idea. That's crazy.
It's also true. Again, you know, I guess maybe we owe a bit of a mea culpa here. To Leslie as well, our earlier conspiracy realist, in that we said there might be psychological issues at play, Leslie. We did not say, in any case, there must be. We also, with your story, Uncle Bosco, pleasure to meet you, bro. We also, I think, share a commonality in these experiences. There are certain events that, upon retrospect, even knowing memory is somewhat treacherous, there are certain events that simply defy plausible explanation, right? And they stick with you. It's strange to me that the line of demarcation between the quote-unquote true believers and the quote-unquote skeptics, it's not whether or not they had a moment like this. It is how they interpret it.
So exactly.
We've seen people who identify themselves as, you know, very zealous skeptics to the point where they're basically another version of fundamentalist religious types. And they'll say, well, yeah, this happened, but here's why it happened. And I know for sure it wasn't something I can't explain. But are they also just reaching for a rationalization? Because one thing both sides of those spectrums have whenever these events occur is a dearth of proof, a lack of proof confirming their opinion or interpretation.
Absolutely valid. I completely see where you're coming from. I do feel like it is, this second one is almost too good not to at least mention. I'm going to try to paraphrase it. It is a little bit longer. But in late spring 2015, I'm doing some yard work, and my wife and kids are out, and we don't really have any neighbors close enough to see. As I'm raking leaves, I see a person standing near the edge of our property about 200 feet from me. I turn to look at the person, and there's no one there. Weird, but there are wild animals in the area and there was a bit of a breeze, so perhaps my eyes were playing tricks on me. Over the next 4 months, I continue to see a figure in my peripheral vision while I'm in my backyard alone. Every 2 to 3 weeks, this would happen. The difference is each time the figure is closer and closer to me. In August, I finally get a halfway decent view of the figure. It's about 6 feet tall in a deeply pleated robe with the hood covering the face and is holding its arms at about a 45 degree angle from its legs. I nearly pooped my pants. That's me editorializing. It's about 30 feet from me. And once again, I register the details of what I'm looking at and it disappears. I think about telling my wife, but concerned she'll think I'm insane. In September, I start smelling smoke when there is none. I start thinking that the figure I've been seeing and the smoke smell are signs of a serious medical issue. I go to see my doctor and get a CT scan and a battery of tests. On October 1st, I was raking leaves and I hear a whisper saying, "Be prepared." And I turn to see the road figure. I cough from the smell of smoke and the figure is gone. On the 2nd, I received a call from my doctor's office telling me all my test results were normal. The next morning, October 3rd, I woke to my phone ringing. My dad was in the hospital, dying, and I needed to leave now to see him if I wanted to say goodbye. He died an hour after I arrived. When I was taking the personal effects home from the hospital, I was overwhelmed by the smell of cigarette smoke coming from his jacket. He was a lifelong smoker, and by the cigarette butts in the driveway of his home, apparently was chain smoking while waiting for the ambulance to come get him. I've not seen the road figure since. I've not smelled phantom smoke since. That was just a particularly eerie one. You know, we talked about examples of folks receiving information, you know, that led to them making a decision that was meaningful. So this, I just thought this was a really good one. But thank you to Leslie and Uncle Bosco for those accounts of divine intervention. Let's take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsor, and we'll be back with more messages from you.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like $1 million.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
And we're back, and we're jumping to the phone lines. Remember, you can call us just like everybody else that has. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. It's a voicemail. Leave one. And we might play it on one of these episodes. Here we go. This message comes from Green Garnet, and it is regarding our episode on hearing voices.
Hey, everybody. You can call me Green Garnet. I'm calling because I just felt compelled to share a little tiny bit with you about hearing voices. When I was a little kid in the 70s and 80s, we lived in a house that was a really big old house from the 1920s. And I would hear voices, but I couldn't make out what they were saying. I didn't feel like they were talking to me. It just sounded like mumbling a lot of times, or like through the wall kind of conversation. I didn't think very much of it. It didn't scare me or anything like that. It was just like something that happened sometimes, except for one night where it was really kind of like escalated. I woke up and so it was kind of like after a dream, but I could still, or whatever. I don't know if it was from a dream or what, but I could hear downstairs, because our bedroom was on the second floor, downstairs, I could hear this voice coming, just yell, kind of talking really loud, saying, "Hey, hey, hey." And it was really loud and it didn't go away. And I started getting scared somebody was actually really downstairs, and woke up my dad to go check and see. I was so sure somebody was down there. Of course, he came back up. There wasn't, and that noise had stopped. And there's no really interesting resolution or other story about it, except for that I don't know if it's related, but my... when I was growing up, I had like this imaginary friend and her boyfriend, but they were like adults. I didn't really play with them. I just like knew them, if that makes sense, Rosie and Steve. And I never heard those voices or saw the friend and her boyfriend ever again once we left the house. So I'm wondering if this is something a little more related to a house thing and that it's energy or some, I don't know. Anyway, interesting story. Not super interesting though. Not as interesting as your show was, but at least you have another data point, another story to add to your collection of hearing voices. I really look forward to your show almost every day. I work in a lab, and sometimes if there's a lot of monotony, and being able to listen to you guys while I'm doing the work is really, really fun. Thanks for doing all the work that you do, and hope you're having a great day or a great night. Bye.
Wow, guys. Okay. We got to talk about this. What do you think?
Imaginary friends? Did you guys have any?
Oh, geez.
Is that too personal? I know we're just coworkers. So.
Well, no, you know, it's funny. I, you know, I was the only child, and I wish I did. It seems really cool. You know, like I really love the movie Inside Out. You know, there's that whole thing with like Bing Bong, the imaginary friend, the like pink elephant creature.
Drop Dead Fred.
Drop Dead Fred. That's right. Yeah, that guy was a psychopath, though. Not a very good friend at all.
He was rambunctious.
Oh man,
I think that's, you know, it's funny though, that didn't really come up in the episode, but the idea of imaginary friends is a lot like hearing voices in a sense, you know, and sometimes you have to wonder, how do these imaginary friends manifest themselves, you know, in the mind of a child versus the interpretation of an adult about what it was like when they were a child.
Well, yeah, they're at the risk. I'm going to talk for a little bit. You guys just interrupt me because I've got so many thoughts on this.
Please.
The first one is, I didn't have an imaginary friend that I can remember, which is really important, right?
I
don't recollect having an imaginary friend. I remember Teddy Ruxpin and him whispering things to me through his tapes. But the important thing there is that maybe I did have an imaginary friend that I was interacting with at some point, but when I got older, either I put that away or it's hidden somewhere in the back of my mind. That is the weird thing about our minds, right? They are pretty pliable at times, and we can, sure, if we go through something especially traumatic, we can kind of forget some stuff and then maybe have to come back to it, or rediscover it later, either accidentally or on purpose.
Yeah. An unethical or incompetent, right kind of mentalist or a therapist could also sort of incept us with the idea, right? Through via hypnotic regression or any other techniques similar.
Exactly.
Shout out Darren Brown. Yeah.
Dude, there's weird stuff that can occur up in this closed closet of a brain skull thing, whatever.
That is the technical term, folks.
That made me smile, Matt. That was lovely. This is closed,
Read Matt's papers on JAMA.
You know, oh man, I have so many on there.
Journal.
I just flood that thing. It's like a mud flood.
That's your hypothesis. All right. So wait, but this idea though, imaginary friends, right?
Yeah. So that is what intrigued me the most about Green Garnet's story. The concept of, as a child, maybe having interactions with, you go on a limb a little bit thinking about this, but maybe with some kind of spirit or leftover energy that was in this 1920s house. And as a child, for one reason or another, she's more attuned to them and has interactions with Rosie and Steve, you know, as this this person and her boyfriend. And she can see them, she can hear them, there's interaction there. But then as she gets older, they're still there. But for some reason, the changes in our minds, in our brains, physiological changes as we grow older, mm-hmm. it won't allow for her to see them and experience them as she once did.
Oh, the accumulation of fluoride. I'm kidding.
I'm kidding. Calcification of your pineal glands.
Don't write the email.
But maybe something does change over time. Again, there aren't studies on this, because how do you get taken seriously and get funding to do a study on do our brains change in a way that our imaginary friends are no longer accessible over time?
Do our antenna attenuate?
Yeah, good luck. Good luck getting funding for that. But that to me is a really intriguing concept. And I wonder if there's anyone else out there who's had maybe a similar thing where there was, to your recollection, an imaginary friend with whom you had interactions, at least to you, right? And then over time, you either gradually lose that connection, or is there one day when it just stops? Mm-hmm. Can you even recall that? Is it possible to recall that moment if you are now, you know, in your 30s, let's say, and you interacted with an imaginary friend at 5 or 6, sure. something like that?
It's interesting you say this, Matt, because typically, and you may find this a fascination as well, Green Garnet, typically when people talk about having an imaginary friend, they are not able to bring up a specific moment where it said goodbye. Right. Or said, I'm going to go in the background because you brush your teeth too much or whatever. But I'm laying that joke go. the idea, typically what happens is it seems somewhere in adolescence, perhaps targeted as close as a summer. So a time window of, let's say, 3 to 4 months. Then it gradually fades out as new external stimuli are introduced. Now, obviously, I have to recuse myself because I have been the imaginary friend of several different people. But the idea here is, I think, really fascinating because it goes back to our concepts of cultural framing for an experience, right? Mm. I hear a voice. I hear it multiple times. It feels like it's the same voice. How do I phrase it? It's clearly not, you know, a thing like, it's not a nefarious force. It's not sinister. It's not in the bed or in the closet waiting to get me.
It's in the walls.
It's in the walls where all the good friends hide. Oh my gosh. It's also one of our collective dreams to take, to do a fun improv thing together. But it's food for thought for sure. Because to your point, Matt, and to your point, Green Garnet, I imagine that there are quite a few people with something like the quote unquote imaginary friend experience. Also, being an only child like you, Noel, there's this tendency to make one's own inner universe, It applies to all people.
Yeah.
But in the formative age of the humans, there's a special particular emphasis on internal world building when one does not have siblings.
Mm. So it's kind of like when Fred Savage is looking down at the pile of laundry, and then the pile of laundry becomes, you know, Howie Mandel as Maurice. And then he proceeds to go underneath the bed down into an entire imaginary world. And
what
his brother,
that, Little Monsters?
Little Monsters!
His brother Ben Savage is like, nah, man, there's no monsters under your bed. And then Ben gets pulled down into the world, and then Fred's got to save Ben. It's just crazy, man.
I was thinking that was sort of an imaginary friend's story, but I wasn't sure. I don't know that one as well as right said Fred. Drop dead Fred.
Very different. They're all in the same universe. We're doing an MCU for everything now. So Drop Dead Fred, Little Monsters, and Right Said Fred, the catwalk guy.
Yes.
All the same.
And if you're into this kind of stuff, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends is a great cartoon. Good one to watch with your kids. And it definitely talks about a lot of the same stuff that those movies do, but in a little bit more of an absurdist, childlike fashion.
But what I'm saying, guys, is that we're all Ben Savage until our pile of laundry becomes Howie Mandel, okay? Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense.
100%.
I'm going to use that.
I'm a big fan of your articles in JAMA, Matt.
Thanks, man. I'm really glad somebody reads them.
Yes. Yeah. Check out our earlier episode on academic journals, if we've done that one yet. but also something important to note that may be of interest to Green Garnet, to you as well. Would love to hear your thoughts on this, folks. The concept of imaginary friends, generally in the world of psychoanalysis, they will not arrive from a vacuum. They will be descended from something, you know, like in A Christmas Story, the kid loves little orphan Annie and is going to get a decoder ring,
yeah.
Right? Spoiler, it's an advertisement. But it's a good advertisement. And I'm wondering, this is a question for all of us playing along at home this evening. Is an imaginary friend a predecessor of the parasocial relationship tendency?
Go on.
Someone who, well, I don't know, because
parasocial being someone who kind of is clingy? Maybe,
parasocial being the tendency that humans have to be quote unquote, like to be psychologically or consciously with someone, like a celebrity, and then to feel that there is a closer personal relationship.
Oh, dude, social media is imaginary friends for days. Podcasts are imaginary friends. I mean, but they're not imaginary, but they fill the same need. We just have technology now where people can have 10 different flavors of imaginary friend, you know?
I don't know. I feel like Conan is probably my friend. He made a whole podcast with friend in
friends.
The title.
He needs friends. Thank you for stepping up, man. You know, good on you, Matt.
I really do love that podcast.
It is. So good. Conan's a legend. Everybody knows that. He needs to stop texting as often, but otherwise, great dude.
For sure.
Definitely needs to stop texting while driving. Conan, that's dangerous and against the law. Knock it off.
Seriously.
His meme game is tight, though.
Oh, yeah. But Leslie, you know, knows, our last emailer, Leslie knows you cannot do that. Texting and driving is dangerous.
Nope.
Leslie, by the way, also didn't like hugs. I don't know if you guys remember, a long time ago, Leslie wrote in our previous emailer that we just talked about. She wrote to tell us she does not like hugs and she refuses to hug anything that's not a cute animal. I don't
feel
know
like
why
hugs
I recall
are presumptuous,
that.
You know?
They can be. They can be.
I don't like it.
I remember you. Yeah, that's why.
For you guys, I'll do it.
But I feel you twitch while I'm holding you close.
I'm a little bit militant about it. I'm like, oh, here we are. I totally am guilty of doing the three taps.
The twitch is what it's all about.
But, that's how you know it took. That's how you know the hug took.
Oh, God.
Little spasms.
I'm calling HR.
You should. Thank you so much, Green Garnet, for writing in with that experience. We love hearing those kind of stories. If anyone else has one like that, we'd love to hear it as well. We'll be right back with more messages from you.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded,
The Apollo Gym murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion.
That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6
million? Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, the story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we have returned. Never fear, fellow conspiracy realist. I obviously did not call HR because I don't like calling people. So we got a, we received something that I think was very illuminating slash disturbing. I want to talk about real quick from our pal, Rich, fellow conspiracy realist, Rich in Southern Alberta. Being that Southern Alberta is in Canada, Rich is still more of a Yankee than we are. Rich says, hello, gentlemen. If you like, you can read this email for the show and refer to me as Rich from Southern Alberta. Got your back, Rich. Done. Rich says, I just finished listening to your strange news segment talking about the so-called Queen of Canada. And as a resident of Southern Alberta near the Saskatchewan border, my ears perked up when you mentioned Ramona DiDullo. The article you referenced in the show made the situation seem very minor and somewhat comical, not much more than a nuisance. But I can assure you that is far from the truth. I've included a link to the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation article written just a few days ago that should answer some of your questions and let you know just how serious the situation is and how potentially dangerous this cult may be. Spoiler alert, it includes threats of public execution. I hope that you find this email helpful and the article informative. Best wishes from Rich in Southern Alberta. Real quick, before we get into this, I want to thank Doc Holliday, Matt, and Noel for putting up with me having to do a couple takes of that one. I don't know why that became a tongue twister. Southern Alberta, near the Saskatchewan border.
You got it, dude.
That's a toughie.
Well, it took me four tries. All right, so longtime conspiracy realist, if you tuned in to our previous Strange News and Listener Mail segments, which again, we welcome, we do this every week, please join us next week as well. We talked about something that, Noel, you in particular have been following. You hipped us when you found a Vice article way back about the so-called QAnon queen. Ramona DiDullo has self-appointed as the matriarch, the monarch of Canada, which is very interesting to the good people of Canada who already had their own government and are part of the, you know, part of the British Empire.
Yes. And I do want to say that maybe the article that I referenced was downplaying things a little bit. I didn't really think so. And I also felt like we were all kind of being visibly freaked out by the potential for this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because there was the whole like surveillance, like people on the roofs and stuff. And there was a lot of veiled threats. I'm interested to hear what this next level is of maybe pulling the veil back on some of these threats, perhaps.
Yeah. I think also what we did in terms of the concept of being somewhat comedic about it is we were pointing out just how very kind people tend to be in most rural environments in the West. You know what I mean? Like if you went to a lot of the Midwest in the United States and you were in a small town and you took over like an abandoned barn or a shed, then what would happen is someone would show up and they would tell you to get out, but they would also probably check if you needed snacks.
Yeah,
like show up with a casserole. Be like, well, you know, also you're not supposed to be here. So when we were being a bit comedic, we're not being dismissive. And to Noel's point there, we have one reason we keep coming back to this person and their followers is because there seems to be a growing danger, right? There's something reaching a boil is the problem. And this happens with, you know, this happens with your Koreshes. This happens with your Bundy, with the Amons. This happens with your Jim Joneses.
We mentioned all of those, too, on the episode, that it was feeling like it was inching towards that kind of standoff situation. Sorry, I'm not like trying to defend ourselves. I just felt like I really did. I think we all felt like this was like, what's the word? A powder keg type situation.
Well, see, now, here's the problem. This person is probably talking directly to me because in my mind, seriously, I viewed that group a lot as a nuisance, as in a group that's traveling through to different towns because nobody wants them there and they're kind of keeping to themselves. And I saw it as the town kind of saying, hey, get out. Like, come on, we don't want y'all here. And I was thinking about solutions that the town could come up with to just force them out. But I didn't think about the things that are in this article that was shared by our listener.
Yeah, so let's go to this article. Let's shout Laura Scarpialetti, and pardon my pronunciation here. Laura is a journalist for the CBC and links us to this article. The headline involves the concept of public executions. And what we see here are mentions of several things we pointed out previously, the militarization of a cult that is, or a cultic movement that is becoming increasingly, it's trending in a bad direction. It's trending toward the us versus them, the delusions of grandeur, the apocalyptic reckonings and predictions that are common to all sorts of ultimately unsustainable ideological movements. The CBC article directly references a letter that the group sent to the mayor, the village councillors, members of the fire department, members of the mounted police, and a school teacher, named them specifically, accused them of corruption, bullying, and stalking, and said the following. If the village does not follow the decrees of the queen, they will receive judgment. And if they are, quote, found guilty of crimes against humanity or treason, they will face publicly broadcast execution upon yourselves and undeserved devastation upon your children, grandchildren, and families. Continues, be forewarned, WTP, we the people. You like the nomenclature? We got the acronyms going. We the people, WTP, are now watching you with open eyes. The curtain is drawn. Your future is in your hands. So these folks in the village council, they call a meeting after the letter work comes out. The mayor's there. They're disgusted. They're scared. People are staying in their houses more often. This is dangerous stuff. The RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted Police, have opened a temporary detachment there in Richmond, in this rural town. And I think it's important to note that this may be something, hopefully this situation resolves peacefully, but what do you think, guys? I don't think, Noel, you're too far off in calling it a powder keg, because clearly, look, cultic organizations like this, they're like fascism. They need an enemy. They need a timeline, right, to rationalize the increased control over the followers. So what will happen?
Well, there's definitely no quiet de-escalation in that event, right? The queen doesn't gradually say, oh, well, maybe I'm not the queen. Oh, well, you know, I haven't been the queen for a while. Guys, I'm not the queen anymore. You know,
no, she's more in the off with their heads mode, I would say.
Yeah. Either I am the queen or I am not the queen, right? And right now I am the queen. And if you say I'm not, right, you're going to have to dethrone me, kind of thing, is what it sounds like, feels like. But again, how do you, with the thought of tanks that essentially act as flamethrowers that we have seen in the past, like how do you not expect some kind of devastating force to be brought down upon you if you were threatening an entire town of people, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Occupying a publicly owned building, right? Like taking over a school.
But if you're threatening, I didn't know about these threats is what I guess I'm saying overall in this. Like, I didn't realize they were calling for the deaths of specific people as well as anybody that they find to be breaking the rules that they set, you know?
Mm-hmm. Which those people did not agree to. They did not vote for this pretender to the throne. I'm not being a jerk. That is the name. That is the term used when one person says they're a monarch and someone else already considers themselves a monarch. I'm just putting that out there.
Not just being rude. Letting that one sit.
Yeah, just let that
sit. No shade on the QAnon queen here. But
you know, and that's that. I think that is. I think it's tremendously impactful because this shows us how these things can build. And if you see something in mass media later, when this stuff goes sideways, then you're going to see no shortage of self-appointed experts who were not paying attention to it until about 20 minutes before they went on air. You know what I mean? Like, it's just... Mm-hmm. The world is happening. It's not happening in a vacuum, and we have to be very careful. That's why strange news and listener mail exist, because we've got to look past. Matt, Noel, you and I were talking about this a little bit offline, you know, the way that news is sort of prepackaged like a microwave meal for people. Here's a very complex situation. We've got 4 minutes and 30 seconds to tell you, you know, I don't know. I think it's dangerous. Really appreciate you, Rich, for reaching out. Stay safe up there and write to us with more details as things develop. Thought we could end on one more if we got time. Do we have one more?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. So we got a friend who, for the sake of anonymity, we'll call the beekeeper. The beekeeper and I got in a little bit of a conversation because the beekeeper is a former attendee of DEF CON. And I pitched you guys on maybe us visiting DEF CON.
No.
So Matt says no. What, you can't afford a burner phone?
I'm not allowed in those places anymore.
All right.
Ever since I got banned for putting Quake on my middle school servers.
Oh, sorry. You did?
I'm sorry. Just joking.
Is that a true story?
It's a true story.
Dude, that's awesome. Power to the people. Nice job, Matt. So here we go. This is a fun story about getting banned from places. Okay, beekeeper. this is your story about getting banned from Caesar's Palace. Here's how it starts. Beekeeper says, I haven't been to a conference in a few years. I'm not as active in InfoSec as I was, but I would love to get back to DEF CON if I can get my Caesar's Palace ban lifted. Also, Beekeeper says, I'm jealous of you all's trip to the Hoover Dam, and I've wanted to go, but I've always been busy when I'm in Vegas.
Because he's a beekeeper.
He's keeping those bees. Yeah. He's putting a jar of bees on the blackjack table.
You know? Ooh.
He's like,
you better put it right in that circle, man, or that dealer look at you funny.
Oh, those things make liquid gold
out there. So ask for more details. Beekeeper says, basically, they kicked me out of my room and I kept breaking back in until they escorted me off the property and banned me. They being Caesar's Palace. And then Beekeeper says, I used prepaid cards and cash for DEF CON, and they couldn't charge the card. They wouldn't take cash or payment over the phone for incidentals. Again, they being Caesar's Palace. Beekeeper says, this was a DEF CON after the mass shooting there in Vegas and was one of the worst DEF CONs because people would come into everyone's room twice a day with or without permission. It was a whole thing. It really pissed off a lot of people. I'm not going there, says Beekeeper, with bank cards or phones that can be stolen or cloned. You get there a few days early, you walk around, you'll find once the conference starts, there are mystery ATMs that appear and disappear after the conference, as well as all kinds of beat me here, doc, as well as all kinds of other f***ery that happens. There is a reason DEF CON's open Wi-Fi network is called the most dangerous Wi-Fi in the world.
I would never in a million years connect to a DEF CON open Wi-Fi.
What?
Are you crazy?
No, why?
Why would you connect to any open internet? Oh,
just
crap.
Put your social security number on the internet. Just get it, you know, just save some effort and
my
some time.
Blood type, list of my fears, here's some rare genetic diseases. You know what I mean?
Stress positions that don't work well with my body.
Right. My opinions on boards and water. Oh, geez. So this was interesting. This is more of a clarion call to anybody who has worked in the hygiene industry, anybody who is interested in sharing their experiences with our fellow conspiracy realist regarding DEF CON. On the fence about attending. Sounds like Matt's a hard no. Noel, I think maybe we can sweeten the deal.
I'm intrigued. I just, you know.
I'll do it if I can leave my cell phone like in Atlanta.
Put in one of those black box things that Dave Chappelle uses, you know?
Faraday bag.
Don't trust it. Nope.
No. Wow.
I have to get a burner phone that only the three of us have access to, right?
Don't you already have one of those, bro? Didn't you call me from one and creep me out that one time?
That one's done.
Okay, it's burnt. It's already burnt.
Is a partnership phone. Mint Mobile. Get Mint Mobile right now. Sorry. But I know, seriously, like that, it really does terrify me. And I identify with this person who wrote to you, Ben, because it's just like, I don't trust any of my electronics near anybody with sufficient know-how.
Yeah, I've got enough imaginary friends. You know what I mean? Like,
no new imaginary friends.
Yeah, we're very Drake about it. But of course, the next logical question will be, is our pal, Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. the Quister of Tech Stuff fame, is he going to attend DEF CON with us? He described himself in an email as cautiously curious and definitely would need to take a burner phone. So I pitched to you guys the idea that we all go, Doc, you're in this too, and stay at that, stay somewhere by the Hoover Dam, somewhere in Boulder City.
Yeah, okay,
get out of the heat.
That's Durango's interesting.
Saloon, perhaps. No, what is it? Dillinger's?
Dillinger's, yeah.
Something
yeah.
like that. Yeah,
but
yeah.
even if we were like sufficiently far enough away on the other side of the strip, I might be okay with that, where only a burner phone is on my person ever at a time, and cash money.
Well, guys, the only thing that's going to get me back out to Vegas anytime soon is the Sick Sad World Festival featuring System of a Down and Lamb of God and
Classic.
Other Alice in Chains, which I guess is they got a new singer now. But yeah, I'd go to that. That'd be fun. But
well, right.
DEF CON sounds second tier fun.
It's pretty deaf. It's not most deaf, but it's definitely deaf. So we should go check it out. We are also going to go now. Thank you so much to everybody who wrote in. Thank you to Leslie. Thank you to Green Garnet. Thank you to Rich. Thank you to the Beekeeper. We can't wait to hear your opinions. Keep the stories coming. You are the reason this show exists. And if you want to join up, if we could proselytize a little bit, we promise we're not going to start a cult. We just want to be easy to find online. And I hope that comment doesn't haunt us at DEF CON.
We are, in fact, easy to find online. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff on X-Nay, Twitter, on Facebook, and on YouTube. On TikTok and Instagram, we go by the handle Conspiracy Stuff Show.
Hey, do you like your phone? Why not call our voicemail number? It is 1-833-STDWYTK. You've got 3 minutes. Give yourself a cool nickname and let us know at some point in that 3 minutes if we can use your name and message on one of these listener mail episodes. If you don't like using your phone, why not instead use your email? We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.